This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello! Yes! I just want to say to please be advised that there was going to be a reception following the reading in the English Department Lounge. And our guests will be swiftly ushered there without hesitation to sign books upstairs, not here. Also, the books will be on sale here by Buffalo Street Bookstore. My name is Elena Maria Viramontes, and I'm the new director of the Creative Writing Program here at Cornell. And I'd like to welcome you to our first event of the 2015-2016 Barbara and David Zalaznik Reading Series. As many of you already know, this Zalaznik Reading Series endowment has not only permitted us to bring to campus some of the most innovative and influential writers and poets of our times, but also to assist in the provision of additional funds for other equally important endowed readings like the Chasen Poetry Reading and the McEnany Memorial Reading. Consequently, we have been able to invite emerging and mid-career writers, as well as alumni, Nobel laureates, and other exciting wordsmiths, cultural commentators, and visionaries to the Cornell campus in order to share their insights, craft, passion, and poetry. Indeed, we are extremely lucky. At this time, I would like to thank J. Robert Lennon for navigating the directorship for the last few years. Thank you very much, John. Thank you. And I would also like to extend our gratitude to the English Department staff members and to our events coordinator, Sarah Rice, and of course, Marianne Marsh, for all the work. And to our dutiful chair, Roger Gilbert, who's been a constant support, and we remain grateful. Okay. Roger. And finally, the success of the program would not be possible without the efforts, wisdom, talents, and teachings of our extraordinary creative writers, Alice Fulton, Ishan Hutchinson, J. Robert Lennon, Joni Makowski, Stephanie Vaughn, Larrey Von Cleef Stefanen, Ernesto Quiñones, Robert Morgan, along with Michael Cook, editor of Epic Magazine, Valgina Mort, our visiting writer, and our lecturer, Charlie Green. I thank them as I thank you now. Let's give them a big round of applause. And now I would like to call up my esteemed colleague and troublemaker, Ishan, who will introduce our speaker.
I like troublemaker. Hi, good evening. Nice. I mean, if you're not up yet, when Ilya gets here, you'll probably be running for the doors. You'll be fully awake. It's really a great pleasure to introduce Ilya, a dear friend. And I just want to echo Helena's thank you to the Zalazniks and extend my heartfelt love for my colleagues. Asked to introduce himself the first day of his MFA seminar, more than 15 years ago, our poet exclaimed, "My name is Ilya Kaminsky, and I write for God." One auditor present at the table reported that Ilya actually shouted his response, which might permit us to think that the young Ilya was either a manic evangelist, indulging momentarily and memorably the sort of Slavic exuberance not untypical of some of the greatest Russian poets. Though I think in spirits, his outbursts placed him more in kinship with Milton's weirder ambition to justify the ways of God to men. Or more correctly, Ilya's statement partly marked and marks him for what he is, a poet of ecstasy, that is one who excites a kind of divine bliss in a listener. For he embodies to a radical degree Phaedrus's notion of the true poet's writing as a form of divine madness. I should say immediately that Ilya is not mad. Though last night, when the kind guy at the hotel asked him what brought you to Ithaca, and he said insanity. And he is not a religious poet. True, there are splinters of Christian and Judaic symbols in his poems, and he has mastered a broken liturgical syntax which functions like a canticle. But it is through the figure of Orpheus, the authorizing of the gods, Ilya's oracular, indefectible poetry takes root. He draws the whole nerve of the lyric into a taut web or a dragnet in which life threshes and poetry ruptures into passionate speech. His voice, unabashed torque, cuts with dramatic momentum as if uttered from an abyss. A poem of Ilya's is a way of paying attention with the soul. Poetry is action in this animating voice, filled with a music yearning like a god in pain. It terrifies us even as it consoles with joy. And here I cannot resist citing just one line I admire so deeply to show a stunning instance of terror bounded with consolation. When the fields are bombed, sadness is forbidden. There's a sense of satire here, but it is sympathetic satire and very chilling when placed in light of the ongoing horrible war in the Ukraine, Ilya's birth country, and the fact that it is a child's voice memorializing the Transnistria War in Moldova. Ilya is a vital in memoriam poet of the utmost privacy, similarly the way Dickinson was during the Civil War. And like her work, his body of work will outlast and withstand, in the words of Czesław Miłosz, the tests of brutal, naked reality. Ilya's body of work consists of one full-length collection, Dancing in Odessa, a book I like to call the gift that continues giving. It has won great acclaim and several awards on both sides of the Atlantic. Here's a very, very short and sample. The Florence Kahn Memorial Award, Moscow Pushkin Institute Award, a Whiting, the Roof Lily, the Lannan, and most recently, an award from China. From China, Ilya. Adam Zajewski declared Dancing in Odessa fresh as a young leaf in the spring when it was published 11 years ago. And it endures unblemished in that perpetual spring, the way very few, if any, first books have done since, I would say, Lowell's Lord Weary's Castle. Ilya has edited several critical anthologies, including the Echo Anthology of International Poetry. And his vigorous translation of Akhmatova, Marina Tsitsaeva, Mandelstam, Polina Borskova, among others, have added new grace notes to English. To invite him up, I want to recall what the two frustrated 1623 editors of Shakespeare's first folio said in their preface. If you don't like him, surely you are in some manifest danger not to understand him. And how right they were. Shakespeare exceeds our full grasp, and Ilya is no less of such a singular and eccentric reach.
I'll never live up to that. Yeah, I might just as well go back to San Diego. It's really humbling to be here. There are some brilliant minds in this room. and I really don't know what the hell I'm doing here. So thank you for having me. As you have noticed by now, I speak with a pretty heavy Russian accent. So by the end of this half an hour or 40 minutes, you will all speak with a heavy Russian accent as well. But just so that you don't suffer, I hope you all have a copy of the handout. Let me start with a little lyric called "We Live It Happily During the War." We live it happily during the war. And when they bombed other people's houses, we protested, but not enough. We opposed them, but not enough. I was in my bed. Around my bed, America was fallen. Invisible house by invisible house by invisible house, I took a chair outside and watched the sun. In the 6 months of a disastrous rain, in a house of money, in a street of money, in a city of money, in a country of money, our great country of money, we, 40 of us, lived happily during the war. Can you follow me okay? More or less. Well, the next, I don't know, about 10 poems are from a new book called Death Republic. It is a longer book about a husband and a wife during the war. Their names are Sonia and Alfonso. And this is just some pages from that book, okay? The first one called That Map of Bone and Open It Was. That was the morning strange helicopter circle. That was the morning we damn it only the earth. We watched the soldier Raymond the boy Petya take iron and fire in his mouth, and see us fold that map of bone and open it was. Our puppets broadcast the news from balconies. It was the air, something in the air wanted us too much. The earth was still. The tower guards ate cucumber sandwiches, and a second day soldiers examined the ears of bartenders, of accountants, of soldiers. They tore Pasha's wife from her bed like a door off a bus. You wouldn't know the weekend's in silence dust to soldiers. On a fifth day we damned on the earth. And I no longer had words to complain, my God, and I saw nothing in the sky, and clearly I didn't know why I was alive. We entered the city that used it to be ours, but the cedars and guardians passed wooden staircases and were iron gates. Be courageous, we said, but no one was courageous. And a sound we did not hear lifted the gas of the world. Snow falls in the ears of the town. The dead boy bounced over the stage. Vasenka's puppet, Petrovich, sneezes, and his puppet, a birch bark captain, collapses one wooden ear in the snow. A car swerves around the corner, and a real police Captain X is stamping his foot on the asphalt. Disperse immediately. Disperse immediately, the puppet cries in a wooden falsetto. Everyone freezes. The deaf boy laughs until a hand claps over his mouth. The captain turns towards the boy and raises a finger. You. You, the puppet raises the finger. The puppeteer watches the puppet watches the captain watches the puppeteer. But all of us in Vasenka's choir watch as the deaf boy leans back, gathers all the speed in his throat, and howls it at the captain. The sound we do not hear lifts the gulls of the water. Fire. Each man has a quiet that revolves around him as he beats his head against the earth, but I am laughing hard and fierce.
I say we were never silent, we read each other's lips and said one word four times and laughed four times in a loving repetition. Our men once frightened bounced to their bed like human must now stand up. Sound lifts from our throats, out of our ears, deafness passes through us like a police whistle. Each scream to the wall, the stove, at the refrigerator, at himself, life to you I stand. And swirlable snow falls in the avenues and surprises the ducks. Whoever listens to me, thank you for the feather on my tongue. Thank you for our argument that ends. Thank you for my deafness, Lord, such fire from a match you never lit. Polisa West, Vankar Petrovich, wife. I watch him watching his woman get arrested. His face locked like a stuck zipper in his coat. My dear soldiers, he yells. My dear soldiers, he yells at them like that. Dig a good hole, lay me nostrils up and shovel in my mouth the decent black earth. Mama Gala throws milk bottles at soldiers. Mama Galia Armalinskaya, 53, is having more sex than you and I. When she walks across her balcony, and a soldier all stands up, and another stands in the whole battalion. We try not to look at her breasts, but they are everywhere, nipples like bullets. But Mama, in a small town, queen of bullshit, with detectives, her consign. Clean. She aims milk bottles at security checkpoints and a yellow bicycle. She flies over the country like a tardy milkman, a rim of ice in her bottle cups. Galia Armalinskaya, you're the luckiest mama in the nation. Your iron bicycle tears with bright whiskey courage through an advanced rank of soldiers in the daylight. You pedal barefoot, wearing just shorts, and let's allow go be a stone. While helicopters circle Sonia and Alphonse kiss in the shower, I kiss the woman whose freckles are off the neighbors. She possesses two girlish nipples which she displayed like medals for bravery. Her trembling lips might come to bed. Her hair, water falling in the middle of the conversation, man come to bed. I woke it in my barber shop of those. Yes, I carried her love to bed on the chair of my hairy arms, but parted lips. Man kiss my parted lips. Lying under the cool sheets, Sonia, the things we did. National anthem. You must speak not only of great devastation, but a woman teasing in the yellow grass. I heard that not from a great philosopher, but from my brother Petrovich. He stick up his consigns clean, his eyes closed, he recited our national anthem. You must drink cucumber vodka and sing, unite women and boys of this earth. You must speak not only of great devastation. And he played the accordion, out of tune, in a country where the only musical instrument is a door. Then the street. On balcony sunlight, on poplar sunlight on our lips. Today no one is shooting, there is just sunlight on sunlight. A girl has her hair with imaginary scissors. The scissors in sunlight, her hair in sunlight. A boy steals a pair of cardamom boots from an arrogant man in sunlight to speak and to say. Sunlight falling inside a sunlight when they shot 50 women and turned a street. A city stood up to tell you what we know. A child learns the world by putting it in his mouth. A boy becomes a man and a man earth body. They blame you for our sins and they seek in the body. For doesn't live in the Soldier Savas Petrovich. The shovel into the police car. They shovel a man in the police car. One morning in March, one time bright morning. The shovel into the police car. He runs and pauses and stops and stands in silence, which is a soul's noise. They take a man who once watching our boys sprinkle themselves into pop's pot. On a day of my arrest, I will be playing piano. There is no piano, but we saw hundreds of old pianos form a bridge over water from Banatan to Alexia. And he said that each piano, what remains of a man is a puppet that speaks with its fingers. What remains of a puppet is a man. What remains of a man? They took you, Petrovich. Is his voice he cannot hear, which is the clearest voice. Flagpole. And at the coffin of Petrovich, and as for the coffin of Petrovich, it got stuck on the stairs. And we carried it upside down. There were too many people and not enough bodies. Too many ears and not enough men attached to them. In this nation, each man does something. His country, some die, others give speeches. Too many people, not enough hands to watch Petrovich's body and trim his fingernails. The last favor a man does for a man. Today, I have to screw on my face the expression of a person, though I am at most an animal. And an animal I am returned from a funeral to his kitchen. Look, God, I, the deaf Ramit who speaks with fingers. I have come, God, I have come running to you. Snowed streets, a sane man stands like a flagpole without a flag. Of marriage in wartime. She scraps me cold like a sound until I spit soap before her picture smiles. A man must smell better than his country, and she throws my shoes and glass in the air. Take off my t-shirt and socks and heels in honor of Petrovich the Tatian, in honor of the boy Peter. I dip a glass in a bathtub, drink dirty water, soaking together, that is sacred to me. Washing mouths together, you can fuck anyone. But with whom can you sit in water? She knew. She had cut the fish, and I knew I had been cut. I whistle as she dries my chest. Sonia, I am a glad man with you. 11 a.m. bombardment. I saw the blue canary of our country. Big breadcrumbs from each soldier's eyes. My body running up Artyomak Street. My clothes in a pillowcase. I looked for a man who looks exactly like me, so I could give him my Sonia, my name, my shirt. It has begun. Neighbors climbing the trolleys at the Zip Market, breaking all their moments in half. And a lot of shouted, I'm so fucking beautiful, I cannot stand it. And the army officers in clunging trolleys aiming at neighbors' faces in the ears. And the army officer yelling, boys, just take your partner to stop, shoot. I saw a man that looks exactly like me. He ran from a bug that burns like an intestine in the sun. It has begun. Soldiers tore Pacha's wife from her bed like a door of a bus. While I lost footsteps from home, I had nothing except my body. But they came for me. I was kissing my wife. I saw the blue canaria for country. Big brat comes from each citizen's eyes. Big brat comes from each neighbor's hand. The snow flooded the earth and fell straight up as it should. To have a country so important, to run into walls, into streetlights, into love at once as one could. Watch their legs as they run and fall. I saw the blue canary of my country. Watch their legs as they run and fall. To live. To live is to love. The great book commands. But such love is not enough. The heart needs a little foolishness. For fold the newspaper, make a hat. I pretend to Sonia, that I am the greatest poet. And she pretends to believe it. My Sonia. Her stories and her beautiful legs, her stories and legs that open other stories. Stop talking, vacation. I see myself a yellow raincoat, a sandwich, a piece of tomato between my teeth. I raise my infant daughter to the sky. I am singing at your pieces. Old fool, my wife laughs on my forehead and my shoulders. Lullaby, okay? Little daughter, rain, water, snow on branches protect your whitewashed walls and neighbor handsome. Child of my April's little lord of 6 pounds, my white hair keeps you asleep, lit. Okay. Our boys want a public urn in the sunlit piazza. The boys drag a policeman, a sign in his arms, I arrested the woman of Vasik. The boys have no idea how to kill a man. The bold man in a barber shop whispers, I will kill him for a box of oranges. The boys pay a box of oranges. He is raw egg in a cup, smells a trickle of lemons in the snow, and he tosses that egg down his throat like a shot of tequila. He is washing his hands, he is putting his tongue where his tooth has been. The girl spit and the informant smiled, the pigeon settles on a stop sign making its way. An idiot boy shouts long live deafness and spits at the soldier. His mother turns to the wall and kisses the bar. Daphnis is suspended above blue tins and Cooper leaves. It feeds on birches, light posts, hospital roofs, bells, and a resting woman's breast. Our boys sign, start our girls, wet and freckled, cross themselves. Tomorrow we will be sick as dogs, but tonight we don't care enough to lie. The bald man jumps on a policeman, hacks him, stops him, and along the policeman flies about the sidewalk. He puts the loud animal bodies in their faces and smells the earth. It is the girls who steal the oranges and hide them in their shirts. Snow falls in the ears of the town. Those who leave it deny that any of us took place. We were happy at that time. It was a happy time. All shops were open for business. No one heard a thing. No one hears a thing. Snow fell on the highway and on the fields. At the trial of God, people ask, why did you allow of this? And the answer will be an echo. Why did you allow all this? Here is a little poem called Author's Prayer. It's from that book called Dancing in Odessa. Author's Prayer. If I speak for the dead, I must leave this animal off my body. I must write the same poem over and over for an empty page in the white flood of their surrender. If I speak for them, I must walk on the edge of myself. I must leave a double-eyed man who rounded the rooms without touching the furniture. Yes, I leave. I can cross the streets asking what is it. I can dance in my sleep and laugh in front of the mirror. Even sleep is a prayer, Lord. I will praise your madness and in a language not mine speak of music that wakes us, music in which we move. For whatever I say is a kind of petition, and the darkest days must I praise.
I have one more sad poem and then a happy poem. Are you going to survive? The next poem is an elegy for a great Russian poet, Osip Mandelstam. If you do not know who he is, you have another great Belarusian poet in this room, Olzhena Morton. I'm sure she'll be very happy to tell you. All you need to know for the purpose of this poem is that Mandelstam was a poet who happened to write a poem against the government. It happened to be Joseph Stalin's government, which means that he was sent into exile where he died. His wife, Nadezhda, was sent to another city, but she survived. The poem is sometimes spoken in voices of Osip and Nadezhda Mandelstam, and it's both prose and verse. That's all you need to know. Can you follow? All right. Music in your manner, and then she for Osip Mandelstam. A mother in Orpheus, sent to hell he never returned, while his widow searched across 1/6 of the earth's surface, clutching the saucepan with his son thrown it up inside, mama writing them by night in case they were found by furious with a search warrant. While there is still some light on the page, he escapes in a stranger's court with his wife on a cloth's mass of sweat. A dagger runs after them, licking the earth where they vaulted and sat in a kitchen. On a stable above the toilet, he will show her the way to silence. They will leave the radio talking to itself, making love. They turn off the lights, but the neighbor has binoculars and he watches. Just settling on his lips. It is the 1930s. Петербург is a frozen ship, the cathedral scaffold down Nevsky Prospect. They move as a new state. It spins into them. In Crimea, he gathered together rich liberals and said to them strictly, on the judgment day, if you are asked it, whether you understood the poet Osip Mandelstam, say no. Have you fed him? You must answer yes. I'm reading aloud the book of my life on earth and confess I love it, grapefruit. In a kitchen sausages testing vodka, the men arrange their cups, a boy in a white shirt, I dip my finger into sweetness. Mother washes behind my ears and we speak of everything that has not come true. We used to say it was after. August, the light in the trees, full of fury, August, filling hands with a language that tastes like smoke now. Memory, pour some beer. Saw the rim of the glass, you who are writing me, have what you want, a golden coin. My time to put it under. The younger brother of a cloud, he walks unshaven in dark green pants and cathedrals, he falls on his knees praying happiness. His words in the floor are the skeletons of dead birds. I have loved, yes, washed my hands, spoke of loyalty to the earth. Now death, a lover boy, counts my fingers. I escape and I'm caught. Escape again and I'm caught, escape and I'm caught. In the sun, the cinder is a clay figure, poetry in the south. I refuse the south. Oh, see, where St. Petersburg stands like a lost
used with churches, chips, and guillotines. I celebrate our lives.
In summer 1924, Osip Mandelstam brought his young wife to St. Petersburg. Nadezhda was what the French call loudly charmant and eccentric. Of course he was. His real student down the staircase for complaining he wasn't published. Osip shot him for Safa, for Jesus Christ.
Poet is a voice, I say, like Icarus, which print to himself as he falls. Yes, my life was a broken branch in a wind in the north in ground. I'm writing now the history of snow, the lamplight bathing the ships that sail across the page.
But on certain afternoons,
the Republic of Trump opens up and I grow frightened that I haven't lived. Not enough to scratch this ecstasy intervals. Here, splashes of clear biblical speech. I played Augustine, the loneliness of their syllables while Icarus skips far. And I read Akhmatova, her rich weight binds me to the earth and a trees in it erase breathing the dry air.
The daylight, yes, I live.
The state hung up by the feet, I saw St. Petersburg daughter swans. I learned the grammar of Gaul's array and found myself for good down Pushkin Street while memory sat in a corner, erasing me with a sponge. I have made mistakes, yes. In bed, I compared to my girlfriend. Government, a Niger barber's hand shaven on the skin, all of us dancing happily around him.
He sat at the edge of his chair and dreamt aloud of good dinners. He composed his poems not on his desk, but in the streets of St. Petersburg. He adored the image of the rooster during a party night under the walls of Acropolis with his son. Like a tap on the cell, he was pounding on the door. You have got to let me out. I wasn't made for this. Once or twice in his life, a man is peeled like apples.
What is left? Is a voice that splits his being down to the center we see obscenity, fright, mart.
But there is joy of shape. There is always more than one silence. Between here
a nifty prospect, the ears bird like stretch. Pray for this man who lived on bread and tomatoes while ducks recited his poetry in each street. Yes, count March, July, weave them together with its word. It is time, Lord.
Press its forces against your silence. The story is told of a man who escapes and is captured into the prose of illness.
After making love, he sits up on a kitchen floor, eyes wide open, speaks of the Lord's emptiness in whose image we are made.
He is out of work, and one silver endured his teeth in his wife's neck, so the skin of her belly ties.
One would think of a boy, land seamless with his tongue, and a woman's skin.
Those are lives just entirely of silence.
Nadezhda, his wife, looks up from the page and speaks.
Osip, Akhmatova, and I were standing together when suddenly Mandelstam melted with joy. Several little girls swam past us, imagining themselves to be horses. The first one stopped, impatiently asked him, where is the last horse?
I grabbed Mandelstam by his hand to prevent him from yawning. And Akhmatova, too, sensing danger, whispered, "Do not run away from us. You're our last horse." Nadezhda continues to speak. "As I die, I walk barefoot across my country. Here winter built the strongest solid to tractors breaking the centers and gallops the plain speech. I'm 23, we live in a cocoon, the butterflies are made. Ozzy puts his fingers in the fire, he gets up early, vaulting around in his sandals. Very slowly, prayers fall into the room, moths are watching him from the window. As his tongue passes over my skin, I see his face from underneath its second clarity." Thus Nadezhda speaks, standing in orange light. Her hands are quiet, talking to themselves. "O God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, on your scale of good and evil, put a plate, a firm foot." Nadezhda continues to speak. "When my husband returned from Voronezh, in his mouth he hid a silver spoon. In his dreams, down Nevsky Prospect, the dictator ran like a wolf. After his past, a wolf with sleep on its eyes. He believed in the human being. Couldn't cure himself of Petersburg. He recited my heart for numbers of the dead. Oh, what he told in a low voice, the unspoken words became the traces of violence. While he slapped a stone in the face, it was good. From that with my husband, each word disappeared in a book. They watched him as he spoke, their vowels had this. And they say, you must leave him alone. For already behind his back, the stone is circled all by themselves." And far. At the last page of this poem, Ozzie had the colors to the middle of his cheeks. "We were walking along Preston Street. But we were talking about, I don't remember. We turned into Gogol Boulevard and Osip said, I'm ready for death. At his arrest, they were searching for bones all over the floor. We sat in one room. On the other side of a wall of neighbors, a Hawaiian guitar was playing. In my presence, the investigator found the wall and showed it to Osip. He nodded slightly. Taking his leave, he kissed me. He was led away at 7 a.m. At the end of each vision, Mandelstam stands with a cloud of earth-drawn bits at the passers-by. You will recognize him alone. He hated Sarskasilo, told Mayakovsky, stop bringing your verse, you're not a Romanian orchestra. But what harmony was it unraveling and unraveling? Nadezhda said the snow fell inside her. She heard the voice of young chickens all over her flesh. Nadezhda, her yes and no are difficult to tell apart. She dances a skirt tucked between her thighs and the light is stretching in a chrome's focus. He's making love to her ear, love is bros, weaving days into knots. He's traveling across her kitchen, touching furniture, a small propeller in his heart turning as he speaks. Outside, a boy pissing against the tree, a beggar cursing at his cat. That summer, 1938, the walls were hot. This unbeat again, the city's love, the city's not love to say yes to the powerful. At the end of each vision, he rubbed her feet with milk. She opened her body, lay on his stomach. "We will meet in Petersburg," he said. you have buried the sun there. I'm going to leave you really quickly with one more just because it's a happy poem, so you don't go home and have nightmares, okay? This is called Praise. It's about 2 pages. Praise. It has an epigraph from a great Italian poet, Montale, and I'm sure Aishan, who loves him, would love to tell you about him. I hope you know how lucky you are to have him here. Both Montale and Aishan, I mean. So here's an epigraph. But one day, through the great left half open, there are yellow lamps shine at us, and in our empty breasts, this golden horns of sunlight pull their songs. Montale. Time, my twin, take me by the hand through the streets of your city, my days, your pigeons are fighting for crowns. A woman asks at night for a story with a happy ending. I have none, a refugee, I go home and become a host, searching the houses I live in. They say the father of my father, of his father, of his father, what a prince who married a Jewish girl against the church's will and his father's will and the father of his father. Losing all. Injured to lose the state, shipped, hiding this ring, his wedding ring, and in my father, hand it to my brother, then took, hand it, then took, hastily. In a family album, we sit like the mannequins of school children whose destruction, like a lecture, is postponed. Then my mother begins to dance, rearranging this dream, her love is different. Love and home is simple as putting a raspberry in my mouth. And my brother's hair, not a single gray hair. He's sitting to his 12-month-old son, and my father is sitting to his 6-year-old son. This is how we live on earth, a flock of sparrows. The darkness, a magician finds quarters behind our ears. We don't know what life is, who makes it. The reality is thick with longing. We put it up to our lips and drink. I believe in childhood. A native land of mercy, them that return and do not return. I see a shore, the trees, a boy running across the streets like a lost. God, the light falls, touching his shoulder. Where a memory, an old flower is placed in the rain, and his dark sleeps. It's time have hunting out for 20 years between life and death. I have run through science. In 1993, I came to America. America. I put the word on a page, it is my key. All I watch the street, the shop, the bicycle, the oleanders. I open the windows of an apartment and say, I had masters once. They're only doubled. Who are we? Why are we here? A lantern they carried still glitters in my sleep, in the street. My father breathes out of a Latin lamp over and over. The memory is starting its old engine. It begins to move when I think the trees are moving. On a page of solid corners, my teacher walks, composing a voice. He wraps each word in his palms. Hands learn from the soil and broken glass. You cannot think a poem, he says. What's the light? Heart. I was born in this city, named after a dish, and I praise no nation. To the rhythm of snow and immigrants' clumsy phrases fall into speech. But you asked it for a story with a happy ending. Your loneliness played its lyre. I sat on the floor watching your lips, love. One legend bird I bought for 40 cents as a child and released it is coming back my soul in a reckless feathers. Oh, the language of birds with no word for complaint, the balconies, the wind, this is how. While darkness through my profile with its little fin, I have learned to see the past as Montalais saw it. The obscure thoughts of God discerned in a mona child's drum beats. Over you, over me, over the lemon trees. Thank you.
So we have very little time for some questions. So Ilya, you'll take some questions, yeah?
Okay, if they don't have any questions, that's
good. I see a hand. Not yet, but I've seen it. She's a beautiful. Oh, there, there.
What are your poems about?
What did you say?
What?
You can't hear either.
You've deaf me.
What war?
What war? Which war?
Do we need a name?
What do we need a name?
What's in the name?
You know, it's complicated. The first poem that I was reading is obviously about the Iraq War, the America poem. After that, I was writing a lot of these poems. And the book was stuck. I shouldn't have written, no, it was stuck for a long time. And it kind of moved more, it's finishing itself now with the Ukrainian thing. I don't really want to book to be about any war in particular. It's a fable, you know. I don't need a name.
Has your work as a translator changed the way you write poems yourself?
As a translator, does that change the way you write poems yourself? Translating, how does that play a role in your writing? I'm so close. Ask it again, please.
Yes. How has working as a translator changed the way you write your poems?
How has working as a translator changed the way you write your poems?
Translation is an education. I'm a lawyer by education, so translating was an education. It's just getting inside another poet's head and trying to figure it out. I never translate alone, simply because Russian is just so different from English. I mean, the literature is so much younger. There's so many ideal possibilities that are not as longer possible in English. So all of my translations by far are failures. But I don't think of them as translations. I really think of them as a kind of homage to a poet. I usually do it with another person, and we just try to read together and see what it is that we love about the poet. So of course they all influence my poems simply because it's the deepest kind of reading I can think of. It's very close reading. Everybody starts writing at 13, 14. Only the fools like us keep going.
Why?
He might tell you another answer.
Why did you fall in love with poetry?
Oh, that's a very different question. I thought you asked it, how did you start? It is the only medium I know that can make me fully alive. Lorca, great poet of Spanish language, says that poet is a professor of five senses. And poetry is the only art that makes me alive with all six.
I think maybe one or two more.
Does your wonderfully expressive way of reading come naturally to you, or did you work on it? And I'm sure it comes naturally to some extent, but did you work on it? It's such a beautiful presentation.
Your style of reading.
He's a translator.
We could get a hit together because it's talk about your style of reading.
There are probably two or three answers to this.
The simple answer is, I don't have a style of reading. All poets, when they write, they are read to themselves. They're great poets in this particular program, and they all read beautifully. I have heard them read personally. Having said that, in my particular situation, this book came out a very long time ago. And I give the handouts, and I'm a very slow writer. I don't believe in writing a book every 3 years. Or maybe I'm incapable of it, which is more true. Anyhow, I do a lot of readings, and then you just discover that you're watching a fly, and that's a terrible thing. So my solution was, my reading must be exactly like my writing process. So you have noticed it, even with the new poems that I was reading, I was changing them. I'm trying to write the poem again. That is the only way it can be interesting for me. Otherwise, it's an incredibly boring thing to stand and read poems. You know, you must write them. Otherwise, why bother? Doesn't make sense at all. It's a revision. It's where I come from, people believe in Midrash. So it's a kind of Midrash, secular, obviously.
So one more.
What are poems have dancing as a motif? Is that like a metaphorical or like symbolic a theme? Like, what do you mean really by like all this dancing?
Can you dance?
It's a very expensive question.
He's interested to know why there's so much dancing. Is it a motif, a symbol?
That might actually be a great question for those of you, and I know the number of people who are trying to write their first book. With any book, you have your obsessions, and you need them in order for your poems to have anything at stake. But once the book is more or less done, you realize that your obsessions are also your limitations or your mannerisms. And so the simple thing was that I had too much repetition of the word dancing. And once I figured that out, I had to make a think out of it. And it's not just the title. You have to find some kind of a, the word formally is the wrong word, but something that unites it in more than just a word. And that's what I was trying to do in my revision of the book, to make it a kind of a metaphor for the book. But at first, it was just a mistake that I had to overcome.
Because he's incapable of dancing, which is another thing. But we are going to continue the conversation upstairs. Please purchase copies of Ilya's book right here. And there's his anthology of called the Echo International Anthology of Poetry. You need that. Please buy his books and come talk more upstairs.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.